O'Reilly Digital Media explores the future of audio, video, and photography. Each show brings you insights from leading experts. Learn more by visiting digitalmedia.oreilly.com.
This is Derek Story, and I'm here with Deke McClellan, author of all sorts of books, but the one we're going to talk about today is Adobe Photoshop CS3 One-on-One. It's the latest in the series of highly successful Photoshop instructional guides with a video. How are you doing today, Deke?
Good. How are you, Derek?
Doing great. So there's a couple things I want to ask you about, but let's start right out. Tell us a little bit about CS3 and the things that you're really liking about it. And then I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of Photoshop and, you've known this application from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But let's start with the new stuff.
Well, I was doing a session actually this morning about CS3 and trying to focus on some of the stuff that I think is really great about the program after 6 months of using it, as opposed to, necessarily all the new features that are going on. And I've really come, what's funny about it is you've got things like smart filters, which I think are probably the most amazing feature in the software in terms of finally we have non-destructive filters to work with. What's funny about it is even though I've been able to take advantage of a lot of power that's associated with smart filters, I find myself still using a lot of the old techniques that I've been using because smart filters don't work with them. I mean, basically, there's a lot of times where smart filters will, make something work, and there's a lot of times where the old school techniques are the only way to get the work done.
Well, that's interesting, and I think this is true for a lot of people who've been using Photoshop for a long time. We figured out ways to get things done. And then a new version comes along, and maybe they've solved the problem that we had before, but we know how the old way works. The results are predictable. How much of that are you wrestling?
I'm wrestling with that quite a bit, actually. What's funny about it, I seem to have this happen with every new version of the software, where the first couple of 3 months, I'm really jazzed about the new features. I'm really taking advantage of them. Obviously, I'm doing a lot of training, so I have to sort of force myself to do some of these things. So I might take advantage of things other people wouldn't. Then I find the next, 3 to 6 months, I'm going, well, this doesn't work this way. This doesn't work this way. I'm still going to do it, my way. And then after I really, totally come to terms with it, which I'm not sure ever happens, but after a good year or so, then I find myself developing new techniques around that version of the software that might actually be better in many cases. I hope they are, actually, all the time. And in vis-a-vis that, one of the features that struck me is just awful when I first got the software, which was a quick selection tool, which I still think is mostly awful, is it's this really easy to use tool inside of Photoshop CS3. It's really kind of an elements tool that's been brought over, and I'm frustrated with it because it doesn't give me any control over what it does, but I'm also fairly impressed by what it can select. And then when you combine it with the refine edges command, which you can use with anything, but
exactly
that function I think is absolutely fantastic, and that's the one that I've been using more and more and more. I find myself almost using it with I'd say 50 to 60% of the selections I create. So it's been interesting, sort of that transformation. And another thing I wanted to show today was the auto-align function.
Yes.
I had taken, I didn't get around to showing it because I went a little long with my demo, but I went and took this group of people out. I wanted to create basically a pretend band is the idea. So there's these bands with names like, My Chemical Romance and Panic at the Disco and stuff like that. So I thought we'd create this band called Tumult at the Aviary.
There you go. I love it. All right. You're off to a good start with the name. Yes. Yeah.
So for the kids,
Exactly. And then,
to get the youth demographic.
Yeah.
And then, anyway, so I shot these four people who looked like they could be in a band. I don't think any of them played instrument, but they look good. And I had them, we took them out to Ventura Beach, and I shot them with an ISO of 800. So I wanted this really grainy look to these shots, And so I had them all jump in the air, and I told them no expressions. I don't want any expression on your face. I don't want you to look like you're giving me any effort while you're jumping. I don't want you to look like you're having fun. I want you to just be the moody band members. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, that shouldn't have been hard for teenagers, right?
These guys are kids by the terms of me, but they're in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
And so I took him, and we took a couple hundred shots of them jumping up in the air. And I wanted them all at the apex of their jump. And so then I took them, I grayscaled them, I made them, I sort of sharpened the grain a little bit just so that we had this ultra gritty look to it. And then I was able to basically auto align. Obviously, I didn't have a tripod, we're in the sand. And I didn't even make an effort because I'm trying to, you know, figure out how well the feature works. And it worked brilliantly. And we were able to auto-line the shots and then basically mask everybody in. It was a little tough because we had some overlap here and there. And then I turned around and took just I made them all switch positions. I chose positions for them. And I made them switch positions. And I took one of the women and just basically painted her in every one of the four positions. So it's four versions of just this one woman. And it is just awesome. It's an amazing shot.
Does it look like an outstanding photograph, right?
Yeah, it looks like what we wanted it to look like, which is we captured every one of the four band members at the apex of the shot in this effortless jump. Everybody's got their toes pointed. Everybody's got a shadow that's drifting away from them. It looks awesome.
So it's a shot that you would kill to have. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And not only would you kill to have it, you kill to show it to people, and I didn't get around to it.
But, you know, now when you do a shot like that, you still put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, for instance, if you're trying to do it, let's say, the traditional way where you caught it all at the same time, you know, there would be a lot of work and you might not get exactly the same shot. But still, the way that you did it, you had to shoot everyone individually.
Right.
You have post-production, all that sort of stuff.
A lot of posts, yeah.
So a lot of times it's not that this is so much, these techniques are so much time-saving, but they allow you to get the final product that you want.
I don't think anything I do, Derek, is a time-saver.
Yes, this is what I'm driving at here. I want people to know the truth.
Yeah. I mean, I've done some automation stuff here and there, but that's not really where I excel, and that's not what I do.
Right.
I'm a big time waster, as you well know.
Yeah.
So, but the great thing about it is the tools let you do stuff that you want to do. I mean, I think you have to have a creative passion to pull this stuff off.
Right.
And after that, and I really think, you know, it's probably this way for every visual artist. You're a photographer. I come at this from a graphic design perspective. But no matter who you are, if you're a creative professional, I think you do best if you have a specific idea of what you're trying to accomplish in advance.
Yes.
Instead of sort of sitting behind the camera and hoping something comes to you, I think you're better trying to push the ideas and try to figure out what it is you want in your mind's eye and then trying to formulate it.
Well, as photographers, that's one of the things that we try to do. You know, there's two types of shots. There's the shot that just happens and you happen to be there to capture it. But a lot of times you're thinking more about how you want the shot to turn out. And these days, I'm even thinking more about what tools I'm going to use afterwards while I'm taking the shot, because there's lots to choose from. We have CS3, we have Lightroom, we have Aperture. There's a lot of really good stuff out there right now.
Yeah. And from my perspective, you've got Illustrator as well and InDesign and these other products.
That's right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's why I think it really helps. You've got to know the tools. You've got to have that base of tool knowledge so that you know what you have to choose from and you know how you can get to the goal. But you also have to have, in the background, you've got to have these creative skills, because the last thing you want to do, and you know this, the last thing you want to do is just be pouring through the filter menu and hope you come up upon a cool effect that's going to save this image.
Right.
That is like the last thing, that's the biggest time waster.
Right.
And that's what I think,
like trying to draw an inside straight, isn't it? I mean, you might do it
a prayer
every now and then, but, you know, forget about it, really.
Yeah. And it can be a real destructive 4 hours. It can just be one of those things you throw up your hands and go, forget about it today.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do like and that I have abandoned my old methods is a black and white conversion. I think the black and white conversion now is a lot of fun, both in Lightroom and CS3. And the images, I used to think, I just delivered a wedding, actually, and I had my old set of actions, you know, that did layers and did all that sort of stuff.
Right.
This time I said, you know what, I'm just going to do it in Lightroom and use the black and white conversion there. I got the prints back. They look really good.
I think that's the best there is, the one in Lightroom and Camera Raw.
Yeah.
They're pretty much the same, aren't they?
They're almost identical now. Yeah.
And I think they pull it off way better inside of there than they do with the black and white command. And that's what I'm telling photographers too, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because I've gotten a little bit of pushback from guys who are used to, you know, capturing the shot as a black and white, which is almost meaningless with RAW.
No.
You've really got to color photograph whether you like it or not. So
I mean, if you're shooting a wedding, shoot it in color. You have the color. You know, and then that way you can then make, you know, the duplicate back black and white.
But not only that, that way you've got three black and whites to work with.
Yeah.
That you can blend and merge.
So if you had just 2 hours and you didn't have to deliver a book, you didn't have to get ready for a talk or anything, just 2 hours to sit down and play, what is it right now that you're really liking about these new tools that you would dabble in?
That I would dabble in for fun?
For fun. Just for fun. I know fun is something that goes way back in our past, but but let's say you had no deadlines, nothing, and you're just going to do something just for me.
Oh, my God. You paint a strange scenario.
Yeah. you can't even visualize it, can you?
I can't even visualize it. You know, probably what I would do is I would sit down and investigate the new JavaScripting inside Photoshop and see what's different. That doesn't sound very fun.
No, it doesn't.
That just happens to be one of those things I haven't got around to.
Maybe you should keep working then.
Maybe I need to reconsider what fun means. Right. Probably wouldn't have anything to do with Photoshop or these other programs.
Well, Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop CS3 101, it's a great book. The videos are fabulous. Hey, you want to say anything about the videos while we're...
Yeah. Well, you know, let me tell you something about the book.
Yeah, tell us about the book.
So the whole concept behind this book is it's a tutorial guide. And I wanted a tutorial guide that I would read. I'm not really a tutorial guy, so I'm not like really sit down and do step by steps because I get frustrated with the pace. I get frustrated with the just do this approach. So it's like, where am I going? What am I doing? Yeah. And so that's what I was trying to do, is craft a story with every one of these projects. So there's about, I don't know, there's 12 lessons, and each lesson starts off with an introduction. Then you go to the video, and the video is basically designed to give you a sense of what's going on inside of this entire lesson. So to introduce you to the tools in a way that's a little easier because I can actually show them to you as opposed to telling you about them. And then all the exercises you go back to the book for the exercises, and all the exercises are text-based with these elaborate figures. And then we go into a quiz at the end of every one of these lessons. And the idea behind the exercises, I wanted to make sure that each and every exercise you feel a real sense of accomplishment. So we're not starting at like ground zero and working our way up every single
time. That's great.
And we're not just like, I got frustrated. I won't name a book, but there was the most frustrated I ever got was with this one book that had how to draw paths with the pen tool. And it basically told you, click here, click here, click here, click here, delete that point, click over here, delete that point. And we got nowhere. You got this like triangular thing that's like nothing and you throw it away. And so I just felt like unless we're crafting something, we're not really... You know, we're not really going to gain any satisfaction from what we're doing. And so I try to make sure that we have a project that's most of the time sort of somewhat built, and then we get it done. And there's no chance that you and I are not going to have almost exactly the same result. Two projects in the entire Photoshop book, we might have slightly different results because they involve, you know, creative brush tools. But otherwise, we're going to have exactly the same thing. If you want to go my way, if you want to go a different way, you're invited to do so inside the books as well.
Well, that's interesting you brought up, because I was having a conversation with one of the O'Reilly editors that we both work with, Colleen Wheeler, and she was asking me, because I teach this stuff at the JC and so forth, she's asking me, would you use any of those videos in a class? How would you feel about that?
Right.
And I said, I would. I would love to use the video. I mean, I might use it at the beginning to set up the lesson, or maybe I talk a little bit about the lesson setup, show a concise piece of video, and then go back and drill down a little bit. If you were teaching a class on one of these lessons, how would you use the video?
Well, now, I'm not sure I would, because, you know, the video is just me, so it would be fairly pointless for me to sit
but
there and use
the
video.
But
let's say I'm not me.
Let's say you're somebody else.
All right, okay.
Tall,
this is like
tall,
the fun
handsome,
exercise.
Dark hair. Yeah. Someone like this.
Good-looking, awfully
hunky.
Yeah,
something like that.
Well, then, the idea is that you can build, because it's always 12 lessons, you could craft... you know, a 12-week course, an 18-week course, a 24-week course over the course of this book. Mm-hmm. And so I would gather that, let's say I'm doing a 24-week course.
Right.
Then I might, you know, basically start off with the lesson and you know, put in my own words how the instruction, you know, what the lesson's going to be about, what the week's going to be about, what we're covering in general, and possibly show the video or just invite my students to watch the video on their own at some point. But make sure they get
it. So it could be part of the homework assignment.
I can see that being it, too.
And
then, obviously, the exercises would be things that we could work on together.
Well, the thing that I like about video, though, and you know this because, you know, you've actually, you know, recorded these things, is that they're concise, right? I mean, you know, you sit down, you think about how you're going to present a topic. They're edited.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you practice the whole sort of deal. So sometimes an instructor will get up there and just kind of wander a little bit.
Yeah, it's not that at all.
Yeah. And the thing I do like about video, it gets right to the point. And then... And then, you know, then you can wander afterwards or add your own personality to it or whatever.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's in there, too. But, I mean, it's not stream of consciousness. I don't want it to be anything like that. I don't want it to be something that's ill-prepared or seems like I just sat down to show it to you. These basically, the way I work in the videos, as you know, are done by lynda.com, which just happens to be right across the street from us.
That's right, yeah. We can wait to them here.
Yeah. The thing is, we spend about 8 to 10 hours per... I spend about 8 to 10 hours on every hour of video that I record because I'm basically doing it again and again and again. And one of the things I'm trying to make sure is it never feels like that when you're listening to it. It doesn't feel like this is the 23rd time I've recorded this damn thing, and I'm so sick and tired of it. But that's really, sometimes that's the way it is. And the point I'm trying to make is that these are trying to be, you know, I'm trying to boil these down as much as possible. And oftentimes, I'll record just some takes that I feel are right on that are like 10-minute takes, and then I'll just feel like, you know what, I bet I could carve 2 minutes off of that. I'll do it again. So that's the kind of what I hope is craftsmanship that goes into the beginning of it, the creation of it. And then the editors, I mean, spend forever cutting out all kinds of things that I throw in there. So
all the swear words.
Mostly that, yeah.
So last question. Where do you think Photoshop's going? I mean, in terms of... for photography, and for all the other disciplines too. I mean, what do you see on the horizon?
Well, you know, I hope where they're going with it, and I think this is actually kind of the route they're going. One of, I think, the big frustrations that a lot of folks have with Photoshop, and I occasionally have with Photoshop. I mean, it's hard after 17 years of using the program, for example, to be completely unbiased and just look at it objectively and say, you know, this should, you know, that there's really any problems with it, because I move fairly fluidly through the program anymore. But what I'm hoping that they're going to do is that they're going to tear some of the program apart, basically, and make it so that it's a little more intuitive. I don't think anything about the program's intuitive anymore.
No.
So a little more intuitive.
Especially as a photographer. That's always been my beef about it. It's not intuitive. You have to learn. It's like you have to earn every step of the way.
Yeah. And things are really tucked away. And I mean, you look at something like the adjustments menu, the adjustments submenu. I mean, why in the world is it a submenu? I mean, it's just some of the most important commands are stashed away in this. I think it's 23 commands long, that darn thing. And there's no order to it. It's completely haphazard. The features work completely independently of each other. If you heap them on top of each other, they're going to be destructive. Even if you apply them as adjustment layers, you're ultimately going to create a destructive effect. And I think there needs to be just a modicum of guidance. Like that is... got to be 50% of what you need to do inside the program in general.
Yeah.
So why isn't it located someplace, you know, toward the front? So that's, you know, so it's a little front loaded. And then I think something like the filters menu, I hate to say it, but I mean, it verges on useless. I mean, it's just there are some key commands. There's about 10 really great commands that you need inside the filter menu. Meanwhile, there's 100 commands inside that menu, and so much of them are time wasters, and they've just been there. It's a trash heap of just stuff that's just been there forever. So, not to be negative, what I'd like to see is that kind of stuff cleaned up and a little. I don't want to see it turn into a workflow program the way that Lightroom is. I think they should be separate, but I would like to see, you know, some guidance from the program and also just, you know, a lot of things like pretty much the way Lightroom. One of the great things about, I actually think Lightroom's great from start to finish, but one of the great things about it that I think should be brought into Photoshop is everything you do, if possible, is non-destructive. Everything you do is editable.
Absolutely.
And I think we're to the point these days that that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing they are kind of moving. I mean, it's a big program, so it's going to happen slowly. They've got to turn a Titanic 180 degrees.
Yeah,
here.
Well, I'd be curious to see if we ever see Photoshop for photographers, Photoshop for web designers, Photoshop for, you know, pre-press and for video. That would be interesting if
I think that's already happening. Yeah,
because right now it's still all kind of in the same hopper.
Yeah. So. But I think we're going to see some things torn apart. I think that's a direction they're going to go, which has some good attributes and some bad, I think.
Yeah. I mean, well, I love the new book. It's looking very good. Thanks for stopping by. And,
my pleasure.
Have a great show, Deke.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.
Okay.
This show was produced and is copyrighted by O'Reilly Media. For more podcasts, tutorials, reviews, weblogs, tips, and tricks, visit O'Reilly Digital Media at digitalmedia.oreilly.com.